Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. I'm Amber Fulmer.
I'm Dane Phillips.
I'm Allie Menegakis.
And I'm Joseph Bias. We are back for our season finale. We had to do it. We had to record this show. The bat signal went up, and the we needed to talk about the Derek Chauvin trial.
I've been saying Chauvin.
Chauvin trial.
Chauvin.
So we're going to get to that. We have two of the best criminal defense attorneys in the state. But before we do that.
Whoa. I don't know about that.
Look, Dane, I'm sorry. Allie's
I was raising
here.
The roof.
Yeah, one of them. Dane is definitely one of them. I don't know if I can be
this
called
is,
that.
This is interesting.
On. All I'm going to say is go on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dane, we've done this for a little while. We're coming up on 100 episodes. Every week we have nothing
but
what.
If we were a television
what.
Show, we'd be in syndication.
Yeah.
Sam.
If the show has nothing but illustrious guests,
go on.
What does that mean? The hosts.
That makes the host even more than illustrious, which
some
is
people
exactly.
would say possibly elite.
Dane, exactly. Look at it. This is a pro level segue. So if you are listening to this,
it was like the dad joke of podcasts.
Look, he got two of them. So of course, look, if you're listening to this and you're in the Columbia area, there's something called the Legal Elite. Columbia Business Monthly does it. All three of us have been fortunate enough to get this distinction for as long as we've done this podcast. We like it. It's a little feather in our cap. We get to put it on our resumes and we get to, you know, say that this podcast is elite. Now, here's the deal. We've been elite the past 3 years. We didn't get less elite. The pandemic has had a lot of effects, but one of them is not making us less elite. In fact, if you look at my waistline, I'm more elite than I was a year ago now. Okay.
Hey-o.
So.
Yeah.
Go to Columbia Business Monthly.
Like
we'll put it on our Twitter page. We'll put it on our website. And if you find it, you know, appropriate to do so, Amber, I can tell you, I vouch for her. She is elite in family law. Dane is elite in criminal defense. And some may say that I have been elite in education. Whatever you decide to do,
even I will say that.
Thank you, Allie. See, you know, she's already a team player. So go to Columbia Business Monthly. If you have that, if you're able to do so, we certainly appreciate it. Now, if you're also in Columbia.
Now, hold on before we even get to that. The Illegal Elite is also in Charleston. And we do have a co-host joining us from
Dane.
The Holy City.
Dane, you are wise beyond your years. Your fatherhood has made you even more prescient. He's a man of the people. So look, guys, Allie is now one of us. She's part of the team. That's right. The best gift that we can give her is to be Charleston Legal Elite. So here's what I want you all to do. Yeah, vote for us. Vote for us. That's great. But if you do not do anything else, go to Charleston, you know, Business Monthly, and you make Allie Menegakis and the SC4C JR team elite this year. They've been great. They've been wonderful. But in 2021, that's when we make them elite.
Thank you. Thank you all for that plug. There's some great lawyers here, but I wouldn't deny it an honor like that to be with y'all.
That's right. So
if you're on this podcast, it's kind of a prerequisite.
You know, Allie, I'm going to be honest with you.
Just being awesome. You got to be awesome.
We tried back when the show started. We tried to invite on non-elite lawyers. Didn't work. Mm-hmm. So we've decided since then, nothing but illustrious guests and guest hosts. So
sorry to throw you in the shark pit. Not
if
that,
you are,
you know,
if
an honor.
If you are in Columbia, the Free Times, the Post and Courier also has the Best of Columbia Award. Dane won't say this because he's a humble guy, but he's also a lawyer and he has an ego. So I'm going to say it for him. Go to the Post and Courier, Free Times, whatever you call it, and they have Best Criminal Defense, Best DUI. And what I want you to do is write in Dane Phillips from Price Benowitz. And we need to get Dane on that list. We need to get Dane as the best of Columbia because he's not just the best of Columbia. He's the best in the damn state. So go to.
And that was worth the fine for cussing, Dane.
That's right. My FCC fine, I'm going to pay it out of pocket.
Which is in the mail. I'll cover you.
I almost reached out to Brandy and was like, what's the price? Because we might run into it on this episode.
We're running into
it. Like, hello.
This is the season finale. We have ran out of stuffs to give.
I know you got my back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look, I think I'm like 3 years in a row as honorable mention. So I'm right there.
So
I want super lawyers. I hadn't gotten super lawyers yet. But look, only if I'm super.
Amber, we know you're super. We know you're super. So anyway, Legal Elite for all four of us, all the four of the names that you see on this show notes. And then if you're in Columbia, or if you're not in Columbia, to be honest with you, vote for Dane. Vote for Dane, Best of Columbia for DUI.
Oh, another thing, Allie. We're in the Midlands, girl. We're expecting you. We're doing the work of three in one region, and now you got to bring all of Charleston in.
That's all right. We can do that.
You got to expand the listenership.
Allie, we expect the listenership to go up dramatically just for your footprint in Charleston alone. So
exactly. We're going to make a little card. You're going to put in all your correspondence. That's
right. I'll take it.
So that the lawyers down there know to listen, get in with the law school. I'm sure they would love for you.
I was just at the law school today, judging in an oral argument. I should have had the cards then.
We
there you go.
That's our fault. We didn't prepare you adequately. But look, Charleston School of Law, I will say this. You know, cut the check. We're there. Just let us know. Because
I would be more than happy to come record in the Holy City.
I'm going to
look into that. They've got some great, great professors there, great students there. So absolutely.
I like the Dewberry Hotel if they're looking, you know.
If they're trying to put us up. All right. So last thing, so that this podcast isn't just plugs for us.
Literally a whole episode. It's all
about. Let me tell you how great we are. Thank you all for listening.
Yes, that's it. We also
summer, right?
That'd be great. Anyway, guys, folks, we run out of time. All right. Go to our website, sclawpod.com. That will give you all of the previous episodes. Everything that we've done this year. We're coming up on 100 episodes. We're going to do something big for number 100, whatever that may be. But when you go to the website, check it out. Follow us on social media. And we appreciate you. You know, we do this. Dane and I always say we do this as a labor of love. And it really is cool to see, you know, visits on the website go up and the listens and the downloads go up. So we really appreciate it. And I know I'm speaking for Dane and Amber when I say that.
Absolutely.
So the nominal reason that we're here is we're going to talk about the murder of George Floyd trial. So in case you've been living under a rock, last year in Minnesota, A black man by the name of George Floyd was murdered by a police officer. The officer's name was Derek Chauvin, and Officer Chauvin put his knee on George Floyd's neck for a period, I think it was 8 or 9 minutes.
And to me, the most important is after they check his pulse, I believe, the testimony is an additional 3 minutes after he had no pulse, after the EMT pulse. To me, that's one of the ones that hits the hardest.
Mm-hmm. And you know, again, if you've been listening to this show, because we did some content on it last year, this was obviously a flashpoint for America. There were demonstrations and protests all throughout the nation, and this state included. The defendant finally went to trial. So we thought, Amber and I thought, this was Amber's idea, who better than to have two of the best elite attorneys in the state to talk about this. So we're going to try and cover all avenues of it.
Let's appreciate that this person went to a full criminal trial within a year in a pandemic. How often does that happen with a case this high profile?
It doesn't happen. Right. So that's
rarely ever get in that fast.
So let's start with Dane and then we'll go to Allie. This one was unique because, you know, you all have represented individuals who have been accused of crimes and whatever else. But in this particular case, you know, the guy's on video and everyone in the country had an opinion on it. Dane, Allie, and Dane, and then we'll go to Allie. Can you talk a little bit about what that process is like as far as, one, having your client to have some notoriety or have notoriety, but then also having to pick a jury, knowing that, just off of y'all's experience, how would, you know, talk to a little bit about kind of what the defense was dealing with there.
Well, I mean, the first thing is that a case that's high profile of this magnitude, I can't even begin to speak on. I've had a few high profile cases, but nothing, you know, there are very few trials in American history that will compare to how much media attention they've had in this case. So I can't even begin to try to scratch the surface of that part of it. Now, you know, navigating that part for the defense attorney, I'm sure was, well, I mean, anybody could imagine that when you're in a jury selection process and literally every juror knows about your case and has mostly, for the most part, a deep-rooted opinion on it, it makes jury selection very, very interesting and very difficult. And it just highlights for South Carolina, and I know Allie 100% agrees with me on this, South Carolina, we do not have attorney-conducted voir dire. And because we don't have attorney-conducted voir dire...
Can you explain for individuals who aren't familiar with it or have forget it from law school, can you talk a little bit about what that is?
So in South Carolina, voir dire is essentially when you see on TV questions being asked of the jury panel, you know, what we call the veneer, but basically it's just the jury pool, all the people that's been called into court to be potential jurors. And there's questions that can be asked. And the law in South Carolina essentially says we as defense attorneys can send the judge a request and say, we would like you to ask these questions. And the judge has full discretion whether to ask those questions or not to ask any of them. And for the most part, the law is very bad. If the judge doesn't want to ask certain questions, the likelihood of getting a reversal on appeal is very low. And so you have standard questions that the judge has to ask. And outside of that, it's the judge's clear opinion, and you'd have to prove abuse of discretion in those. And so it makes it very difficult, because what you end up with, for the most part, is making a snap judgment of these potential jurors when they're called based on the things that constitutionally you're not supposed to make a decision on, such as their race, their age, their gender. Mm-hmm. Basically, the only things you get when you don't have a good voir dire, when a judge doesn't really expand it, you basically just have where they live, what their job is, what their spouse's job is, and outside of that, what they look like, a stereotype. And it is just, to me, a deprivation of justice in South Carolina. Again, there's reasons why I think prosecutors want that. And, you know, some prosecutors are in favor of attorney conducted voir dire, but I think they're in a very limited capacity. And so as a whole, I'm praying that, you know, in the next decade, this is a hill we can overcome, a hurdle we can jump over, because it's really one of the next steps in the short list of things that needs to happen and to change the law. And so, again, with that case in particular, jury voir dire is so important, because it's unknown what implicit bias is, right? Nobody can know the unknown. And somebody, if they have an unknown implicit bias, the only way you can know is through questioning. And so that's the cleverness of it.
My question is, in South Carolina, in the few criminal trials that I participated in with my old firm, when you went up to select the jury, the prosecution already had a list pulled behind them of everyone that had pending criminal charges or prior criminal charges, lists that weren't available to the defense. I just wondered if in other jurisdictions it was the same way.
I can't speak for other jurisdictions, but I've made motions for them to share the list with me. Some judges are open to it. Some are not.
I just wondered if that was something they did in Minnesota, or that was if that was just a South Carolina thing.
Well, you know, that part I'm not sure of. Now, again, I've made motions for the judge to make the state share it with me, mm-hmm. but a judge could easily deny that request, or they can force us to pay for it, and that makes things much more difficult than it needs to be.
And I thought Richland, I believe, the last voir dire I went, or when they were paneling the jury, they said the spouse's name and all that stuff. It took forever.
Allie, I want to kind of come to you. So with the stipulation, and admittedly that none of us have done a case this high profile, at some point, though, as a criminal defense attorney, you got to put up a defense. And I will, you know, I didn't agree with the defense. I didn't agree with some of the tactics, but I also acknowledge that you got to say something. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about kind of what that mindset is? I mean, in this one, the whole thing was on video. Everyone saw it. You know, how is that mentally and strategically if you don't really have anything else to say? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone has, you know, defended a case of this high profile. I can't think of one, certainly not in recent history, especially with social media and the way news travels so quickly these days. I can't imagine how difficult and what a huge burden it must be from the defense to overcome any prejudices against their client. Obviously, you know, I'm a, you know, founder of a criminal justice reform organization, but at the same time, I'm a criminal defense attorney. And, you know, I strongly believe in and am grateful every day for the Constitution and for the rights that each of us has, regardless of who it is or what the charge is or what their background or how high profile of a case it is. And I think, you know, to Dane's point, that just it brings up how important a jury is in any trial, and how important, you know, in Florida, we did have attorney-led voir dire. You know, I was always taught that was the most important part of an entire trial, more important than the evidence, more important than closing arguments, more important than opening statements, because that the jury is the one that makes that decision. And many jurors make up their minds sometimes during opening statement or before they even hear opening statement and just hear those charges. Mm-hmm. And I think that watching these trials, you know, especially for what we do, we always think back about what if that happened here. The limitations that citizens have here when it comes to discovery, when it comes to lack of speedy trial rules, when it comes to lack of attorney-led voir dire, when it comes to so many different things here, it is terrifying to think, you know, regardless of how you feel about Derek Chauvin, how can someone get a fair trial here if you don't even know who these jurors are? And as Dane knows, you know, I had a double murder trial earlier this August, right in the middle of the pandemic. It was the first trial of that magnitude I've had here in South Carolina. And comparing it to a jurisdiction like in Florida that has attorney-led voir dire, there was no comparison in the disadvantage that South Carolinians have. We would spend hours, sometimes days for jury selection in Florida when it came to serious level offenses. And the judge would give us almost full discretion to inquire of jurors, not just that preliminary question about prejudices, but follow-up questions to really dive into who these people are. And frankly, even then, you still don't know who these people are. So to have a trial where you really have very, very basic, short answers, literally a matter of seconds that you hear these jurors speak about very basic, shallow issues. There is no way in our system that I think a defendant can get a fair trial. And the fact that we have it in other jurisdictions is just, it's so terrible, in my opinion.
Well, I want to, you know, clarify something on behalf of both of you, just because we've talked about this, and I know that you both were, even though you're criminal defense attorneys, you all were horrified by the video and, you know, saw the the murder that, you know, the jury ultimately convicted Officer Chauvin of. But I think if I'm understanding you both, you know, there still needs to be a process, right? There still has to be a process by which we, you know, allow these individuals to, you know, have their day in court and allow the victims to have justice, right?
100%. And so, look, you won't find two bigger criminal justice reform advocates. I mean, look, Ali started a whole nonprofit. And
you know, great justice reform advocates.
And so
doing things.
That's one of the most horrifying videos we've ever seen. We've discussed that on here. I mean, it is a murder on video. But when it comes to something we're also very passionate about, which is constitutional rights and the importance of those and the reasons why, if we cannot, it's the slippery slope of if we cannot ensure that the most hated person gets a fair trial, then we can't ensure that everyone gets a fair trial.
Sure. Yeah.
It's something like when I try to tell people about my job, because you get the how do you sleep at night and the whole all those kind of, you know, cocktail hour questions. It's, you know, I say, look, this job is not for everybody. You got to be a special person and have a special passion to do this job the right way, because you have to separate yourself. You know, I'm defending the Constitution. I'm fighting for fairness in the procedure. I'm holding the government up to its burden. And there's all these things. And in a lot of cases, you know, you do get close to certain clients. But you know, it's all in a vacuum. And so, for each case, and these are things that we cannot take lightly. And it's one where you can easily see how easy it is for us to chip away at those rights and try to cut corners and what's so important. And before we go to the kind of our next topic, I did want to put in perspective the timing of like what Ali was trying to say as far as how different Florida was. So in South Carolina, it is not uncommon for us to have a jury picked by noon or 1 o'clock. You will pick a jury in a murder case. And this is a murder case.
So just not to interrupt you, but you know, everybody comes in 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning.
9 o'clock.
Right. You pick a jury at noon and then go ahead.
Yes. So jury shows up at 9 o'clock. By noon or 1 o'clock, no later than 1:30. And this is on average in a murder case, non-death penalty, you will have a jury selected and you'll break for lunch. Now, in other jurisdictions, it can take several days, and some jurisdictions, several weeks to pick a jury in a murder case. We're done by lunch on Monday morning. That put that in perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that was the case for my trial earlier this year. And you know, going on your point, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And that is one point that I really would like to get home here tonight, is that as much as I am disgusted and have been disgusted by the video of how George Floyd died and how he was murdered, just as I was for Walter Scott, just as I am for all the videos, if you do not agree with the way the system works in the criminal justice system, you cannot have your cake and eat it too. You cannot say this is a broken system, but let's use it to the fullest extent of the law on the person we hate most. Yep. One thing that, you know, we have not been focusing as much on the day-to-day aspects of this trial, because the problem obviously is Derek Chauvin and what he did, but he is not the source of the problem. The problem is a systemic problem that has been happening since the beginning of our country, frankly, and beginning of police as we, from the institution of policing in our country, which started, by the way, in our state here in Charleston. So I don't want people to feel that. I'm concerned that when we have this anger and sadness and disgust, that we go towards that mob think mentality of persecution towards an individual. Obviously, he will be tried. He has been. he will get a fair trial. If he hasn't, he will get appealed and he will get another fair trial and he will be sentenced and justice will be served on him. But ultimately, as we've seen in the last few days in Minnesota, the problem still remains.
Sure.
So the solution is to focus on the systemic issues as to why Derek Chauvin felt it was okay to do that in the beginning, why the other officers around him didn't stop him. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hope that we focus on and we learn from here.
Amber, it's ironic because, you know, last summer, I know that you were part of the group that was doing the live tweeting of People versus OJ. And mm-hmm. I could not help but think about that during this trial when it came specifically to the pressure on the prosecution of not messing this up. Like mm-hmm. everyone knew. And I say everyone, but obviously you have people disagree and they're wrong. But everybody sees the video and they have this result in mind. And just like the OJ case, everyone saw the bite. Everybody has a result. And the pressure is to just not mm-hmm. mess it up, right? Like, I can't imagine, you know, that pressure. And to that end, I think that's why the prosecution were so thorough in putting up all of these witnesses, including South Carolina's own Seth Stoughton, mm-hmm. in presenting this case to with where they're trying to be as thorough as possible, just so that it can't be said, oh, you missed this or you missed that. Mm-hmm. Because even going off of what Allie and Dane are saying, like, you know, they paid the defense attorneys too. Like they're there to do a job, right?
I don't know if you all remember, you know, the Casey Anthony trial. So I was in law school at that time, and that prosecution really made some significant errors that they never lived down. I think he lost his job after that trial.
It was awful.
Certainly, I think that's the last thing that a prosecutor wants. But in the end, you know, that happens all the time in our system,
right?
And that is part of the beauty of our system in terms of fairness for everyone, regardless of who you are or how much people hate you, that our Constitution and our rights apply equally and fairly to every single person. So that's for the courts to decide.
Dane, we talked before the show about some of the strategy and something that you noticed even in the defense opening statement about how the defense opened their defense. So the first thing other than this voir dire that they opened with was about reasonable doubt. Can you talk a little about that and why you felt that that was a bad idea?
Yeah. So again, from a trial advocacy standpoint, I know a lot of our listeners are young lawyers and law students. And so from a criminal defense perspective, you know, I have the National Criminal Defense College training, and the way they teach you how to do an opening statement is 180 degrees exact opposite mm-hmm. of the way he started it. And so he starts his opening statement with the line of a reasonable doubt is, and gives the definition. So I'm going to implore young criminal defense lawyers out there, if please do not start your opening statement that way. You have a story to tell in your mm-hmm. case. You have a theory of the case. Mm-hmm. You need to make that narrative into a story and present that. Don't do the whole old school roadmap. Don't thank the jurors. They don't want to be there. Don't mm-hmm. tell them your name. They don't care about, you know, don't yep. give yourself a billboard. You make your theme, your theory of the case, and you present it in a narrative story. And so just from a trial advocacy, the reason we wanted to bring that up is trying to teach, obviously, young lawyers what I believe is the right way to do it. And, you know, so some of the other things that just kind of jumped out was, you know, an excessive amount of time. Now, this is a lot of people. This is a controversial thing. Some agree, some disagree. But, you know, the closing was 3 hours. The opening was a long time. I'm in the camp that openings and closings should not last actually very, very long. I think that people's mm-hmm. attention spans these days are very short, and your case can be summed up if you're doing it right. Your theory in a short amount of time. And so, again, that's controversial, and I can go into more detail about it with, you know, they can obviously, people could reach out to me directly. But if you're doing a 3-hour closing, you're probably going to lose, in my opinion.
One of the interesting details to this trial was the use of video. And, I think that both prosecution and defense gave their best effort. You know, they asked the questions, but I doubt that the jury members hadn't seen that video. And, you know, it's something different when you're talking about testimony, a he said, she said, versus a video. Mm-hmm. And by the way, with different angles and different people.
And they brought in everyone that watched it at different points to say, yep, this is what I saw.
If a picture is 1,000 words, a video is 1,000,000. I mean, that's the linchpin of the case. The defense somehow has to explain something that's pretty unexplainable. And this amount of time Chauvin's knee is on George Floyd's neck after he is even unconscious, even after the EMT had checked his pulse. That's unexplainable.
They determined to actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, be longer than we initially thought, correct? Like that it went a longer, like upwards of
It was 9 minutes and 29 seconds.
And it had gone up from 8 or something like that, that his knee was ultimately on his neck. And I thought that's horrible, like that they're finding out this right now that it was that much longer.
And I think, you know, people always ask me, you know, like, oh, wasn't this so terrible? Wasn't, you know, the video so terrible? Yes, it was. But I think, you know, all of us who have been public defenders before, those who are criminal defense attorneys before, this is so common. It's just so common. And I just always think about, what if there was no video? Right. No one would have heard about this. And for every one of the George Floyds, there's probably thousands of people out there that have dealt with the same thing. And
before we could even do it.
Right.
And then before that was even an option.
It's all the press
that even said, hey, this is going on. We're catching it.
The police press release that day that it happened listed it as a medical incident.
Right.
Quote, unquote. So the medical incident ended up actually being a murder.
A murder. And to be clear, you know, you all are both criminal defense attorneys. So you deal with individuals who allege police misconduct all the time. And although, you know, you all are kind of, it's kind of a flipping roles, because in this time there was a video and there was a black man who did get killed. Usually, Allie, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're representing somebody who says, wait, this guy was too rough with me. If he can talk, if he had the benefit of not being killed by the police, and there's no proof to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, for years, even before there were body cameras and we were practicing it, I think so many times when I was in, when I was a PD down in Florida and here too, where I remember I had one young person, he was 18 years old and he had 32 staples on his head, on his head from the dog biting him for like 10 minutes on his head.
Wow.
You know, and that's just one of the hundreds of examples that I'm sure Dane has seen too. And then we have body cameras that are coming out and we start to have some evidence of these things, but it's still not enough. You know, South Carolina, after Walter Scott, you know, passed legislation that required, a lot of people think it requires every cop to have a body camera. That's not true. It requires every agency, which is great, to have some kind of procedures and provide body cameras. But there's still so many cases out there where the officers don't have to have a body camera. I mean, that's just one simple thing that we can change here. I think especially people of color, you know, I have a good friend who I work with down in Florida, Destiny Singh, who now works up in DC area as a criminal defense attorney. And she, she doesn't want us to share these videos. She is of the belief that we should not be sharing videos of people of color being killed or beaten by police, because we shouldn't have to need to see that video to believe it. We right. should trust people of color that they are telling the truth. Their word should be just as important as that of a police officer. And I hope that one day we will get to that point.
Well, maybe this is the part where, you know, as a man of color, you know, this case was weird in that, and I think that most attorneys and blacks and people of color who are, I'm trying to parse my words because I don't want to speak out of turn. I certainly don't want to be the representative for every black person. But I would say generally, if you talk to African-Americans, even with the video, even with the very thorough prosecution, even with everything that's gone on, I don't think anyone would have bet money that the jury would have come back guilty. And that's just the reality of being black in America. And when you have a, when you get let down by the justice system so many times, and you're constantly being beaten down and being told that the death of this man is analogous. I mean, the defense in this case did exactly what every black person knew was going to happen. And they made the try to make the trial about George Floyd. Oh, George Floyd mm-hmm. had this issue and he had a criminal history and whatever else. We all knew that it was coming because it always happens. It runs like clockwork. So when you have these cases, high profile as they may be, and this was a benefit where, you know, it's on video, everybody knew it. I don't know one person who thought that this case was going to end up guilty. And like I
was surprised. I didn't think so either.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, and I put on social media, it's not a cause for celebration because a man died and he didn't need to. It's not a cause of relief because there's no guarantee that the next one is going to be different anyway. But it's one of those things where you just kind of sit back and you exhale. And as a person of color, you know,
I mean, it took 30 years since Rodney King was caught on tape,
and
almost 30 years. It hadn't been that long.
You have. Yeah. And you have
to get to this one.
Yeah. You have these feelings, especially as an attorney, and I know that this is the case for some of my brothers and sisters who practice civil. Like, we get into this business because we want to make a difference. We want to be representative. We want to let our clients have a fair shake. But when you keep getting beaten down by verdicts and situations, it puts doubt in your minds about what you're even doing. So the fact that he got found guilty when everyone with the right mind knew he should have been guilty, even if you don't know Minnesota law, and we'll talk about the difference in what South Carolina does in a second as we kind of wrap up. But the fact that he got found guilty meant more to black people around this country than I think anyone will know, because at the very least it says it's not impossible for this to happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And like just the relief, and I was texting and talking to friends, just the relief that we had in that, well, yeah, if this one didn't turn out, then these cases that Allie and Dane are doing where police are beating up, they have no chance. So anyway, that's my little rant. We're running long, but I do want to get to this. So he got found guilty of second degree murder, third degree murder, and manslaughter. Dane, Allie, if this case had happened in South Carolina, the charges would be different. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between South Carolina versus what they are doing in Minnesota, with the caveat, of course, being we know y'all aren't experts in Minnesota law?
Yeah, so I will admit that Minnesota law is something very foreign to me. However, what I can tell you is it's also very foreign to how things are done in South Carolina. It's significantly different. And so, you know, a lot of defense attorneys in South Carolina who hadn't really looked into Minnesota law were perplexed by, just like a lot of people, how does somebody be found guilty of multiple crimes? And so in South Carolina, what would happen is he would be charged with, generally, this the prosecutor's decision to what charge they want to send to a grand jury. But say under this kind of fact pattern, the prosecutor would have gotten an indictment for the second degree murder charge and would have taken him to trial on the second degree murder charge. Now, let's first start there. In South Carolina, we don't have degrees of murder. We just have murder, and it's specific intent to kill murder. We don't have unintentional killing murder or non-malice murder. It's straight specific intent to kill murder. And then you have kind of the next part where we're going to talk about, which is also significantly different. So we don't have degrees of murder as they do, but you would have, say, the murder charge brought before the jury. And then once you have the close of evidence, and the judge has to, what they call, you know, jury instructions, has to charge the law to the jury. If there is any evidence, and that's kind of the big thing, any evidence. And so if there's any evidence, the lawyers can make an argument for lesser included offenses. And so a lesser included offense of murder in South Carolina could be voluntary manslaughter. If there's any evidence of it, involuntary manslaughter or any of the other, you know, assault and battery, high and aggravated nature. But and the key is if there's any evidence presented in the trial. And so with that, they would have just the one charge that's before the jury as the case. And then if there's any evidence, the judge could add those to the jury instructions and tell the jury, you can choose murder. But if you don't think that's appropriate, you can choose voluntary manslaughter. And if you don't think that's appropriate, you could choose involuntary manslaughter. It depends if, again, and a judge could decide not to charge involuntary manslaughter, but just charge voluntary because it's based on any evidence. And there's a whole set of tests we're not going to get into as far as what's a lesser included and all that. There's all the legal stuff we'd have to go into. But at the end of the day, the jury has to pick one. You can't have an inconsistent verdict where in verdicts where you have, and this where we have second degree, third degree murder, and then manslaughter, and the judge is going to have to choose which one to sentence. Minnesota is just entirely different than the way we would do it in South Carolina. And so a jury in South Carolina would have had to choose murder. And let's just say for argument's sake that the judge gave a voluntary manslaughter charge or voluntary manslaughter. They would have to choose one or the other. And it's because of how significantly different our law is compared to their degrees of murder and manslaughter. So, I mean, it's significant. And I'll pass it to Allie from here.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've got friends texting me from all over the country asking about that. But yeah, I mean, it's different in most states. Usually you do not find someone guilty of, you know, multiple charges that have similar elements. You know, that's why we have double jeopardy. That's what people hear about. And they're like, isn't this double jeopardy? Well, it would be in most states. But, you know, here they do the lesser included offenses. You know, I brought up Casey Anthony before. That was one of the problems with that. It was that they felt that, you know, they could only charge one and then they could go with a lesser included. They ended up picking a charge that was a little too serious, and the jury didn't end up finding her guilty of that, and she walked on the murder charges. So that's a really kind of a difficult decision for a prosecutor. You know, what can we actually prove? It's interesting here is that they don't have to really make that choice. They can go for all of them, which is probably a lot easier, I would think, for the prosecution. Just throw it all out there and see what sticks. And here they got 3 out of 3. Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if they're thinking, man, maybe we should have charged first.
Well, I mean, so like one of the things that I was sitting here thinking, so in South Carolina, you're right, he didn't testify. And so there's an argument that there wouldn't be any evidence for the voluntary manslaughter charge. If we're in South, we're talking about South Carolina. And so then it would be a murder or nothing. And that would put a lot of stress, like you just said, with the, say, the Casey Anthony case, that put a lot of stress on the prosecutor, because in South Carolina, they'd have to prove the specific intent to kill because of our murder statute. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a factual jury question that would be a problem in this case when you talk about reasonable doubt, and when they're trying to say that, because under this second degree murder and third degree murder, you know, they, with those degrees, they're not having to prove in Minnesota specific intent to kill. They're just showing the unintentional killing, which is not murder in South Carolina. So that's how different it is. It's an entirely different case. And the fact that they're able to throw all three of them up, to me, I imagine they have a lot of compromised verdicts in Minnesota where a jury just kind of picks a lesser and goes with it instead of having, as a defense attorney, I don't like that system. But again, it's interesting.
And that's the question here. A lot of us have is like, a lot of prosecutors, do we want to include lesser included offenses? Does the defense want to include lesser included offenses? A lot of times jurors will split the baby when they don't know what to do. So they'll pick a lesser included when, maybe had there not been one on the verdict form, they would have just gone not guilty. So it's a really interesting system that they have there.
Oh, and just so we can go in, so I got it pulled up here. So in the three separate, offenses that he was convicted of, so he's found guilty of one, causing the death of a human being without intent while committing or attempting to commit an assault. That's second degree murder in Minnesota. Third degree murder in Minnesota is unintentionally causing a death by committing an act that is imminently dangerous to other persons while exhibiting a depraved mind with reckless disregard for human life. And then for the manslaughter in Minnesota, it's creating an unreasonable risk by consciously taking the chance of causing death or great bodily harm to someone else. Whereas in South Carolina, murder is, a very specific statute in the sense that it is an intentional, unlawful killing of a person with malice or forethought. That's murder in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Boom. And the whole malice is something that is interesting because it's very specific in a case where a jury just kind of has to make a choice, because prosecutors can make arguments for malice. But the other part is a forethought. It can be one millisecond the prosecutors get to argue is this premeditation part of it. And, that's a whole nother podcast we can talk about. But it just shows you how different it is from state to state.
Well, again, we could probably go all night talking about this. It was a long trial, very complex issues, but I appreciate you guys kind of providing some context for it. On a much more positive note, this is the end of our season. And
what episode number is this? Do you know?
You know what? I do not know, but
I've been sitting over here thinking of like 100 somethings.
We're gonna do something big for 100.
Hundreds around the legal just.
Are we gonna go to legal verdicts ever? Can I come? I'm inviting myself again.
Yeah,
like a destination podcast for 100th episode.
I am down to go anywhere that the law school podcast bus takes us. That we've adopted as the bus of this show. So, I have no idea what number episode. I think we're getting close. I know Hubbard was 70.
In the 80s, right?
Yeah, we're probably in the 90s, actually.
Yeah.
I hope we're not.
That's just so impressive, y'all. Congratulations. It's really, really great.
That is an honor more deserved of these two gentlemen.
Well, I can tell you.
I'm probably out of a third of that.
We basically, Joseph threw us on his back and carried us. I will say he pulled the weight of the team on this one and definitely got us through it. It's been a wild
rough
ride.
Few months.
It's been rough
for those with kids.
Yeah, look, I the puppy excuse has got out the window, so I had to do some more heavy lifting. By my count, I think this is episode 91, by the way. So we're coming up on 100. Yay.
Probably over 30,000 listens, right?
We are definitely over 30,000 listens. We have, we If you are listening to this show, tell a friend, tell some folks. We, you know, depending on the episode, we do everything from about 200, 400 listeners a week that we put out content. So we're very proud of the show. We appreciate you all for listening. And like I said, as we kind of wrap up, just some housekeeping. There will be bonus content over the summer. Allie and SC4CJR are going to take over the feed at some point. We're going to have maybe some book reviews. And if we have anything else silly, last year around this time, we did our fictional lawyer tournament where my co-host That's overruled me.
Thank you.
And yeah, my co-host overruled me and did not pick Daniel Caffey from Few Good Men. Maybe we'll do something else like that this summer.
That was awesome.
But thank you all so much for listening. Continue to follow us on social media. You can follow us, of course, at SC Law Pod. You can follow that on Facebook and Twitter. And Instagram, apparently. You can also go to our website, sclawpod.com. You can follow Allie and the exploits of SC4CJR. You can follow them at sc4cjr.org and see what they're up to. Follow them on Facebook, too. On Thursdays, they do a Facebook Live on death penalty. Go and check those out. They're very interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll learn more about the topic. You can follow Dane at SC Crim Lawyer. And once you follow Dane, remember, vote him best in Columbia, DUI. He's not an honorable mention guy. He is a award winner. You can follow Amber.
That would have been a good part for my Dane joke.
Tell your Dane joke.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and it was when you earlier, when you're like, he is our great lawyer. When earlier we were talking about all the attorneys, you're like, we will never have a case of this magnitude. You're kind of humbling yourself. And I was like, Dane, you're our Dershowitz. No, you won't have your moment in the sun. Whoa. And you're
let's pick another high profile lawyer.
It was quite right. I'm really
I
was like, Dane, Dershowitz.
We can hit a couple other high profile ones.
We'll workshop that one a little bit. But if you want more comedy like that, you can of course follow Amber at Red Judicata, and you can follow me at Joseph P. Bias on Twitter. But I don't want you to follow me. I don't need you to follow me. I don't need your follows or your likes. I'm a strong, independent man that I don't need you. So there you go.
We need your followers. Follow us if you don't want to follow Joseph.
So thank you so much for listening.
Joseph, he's hilarious.
Oh, thanks, guys. guys.
Bulls and Broncos.
Yeah, it's just Bulls, Broncos, and sweater vests. That's all my feed is.
But you're riding off the Bulls or something?
No, they just depress me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Bulls.
I mean, as a Gamecock fan, I can sympathize.
Bulls are different.
I was about to say, I've never experienced greatness before in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Let's chill and relax. This is the worst closing to a show ever because I'm getting distracted. No, it's not your fault. So we'll be back in August full time. But look out for bonus content since then. And also, if you ever want to hear anything, if you have ideas for guests, let us know. Email us, directexaminationpodcast@gmail.com. Slide into our DMs on social media. We love to hear from you. Amber, Dane, did I miss anything?
That's it. Like, share, and subscribe. That's what the cool kids say.
Like, share, and subscribe. And, you know, lastly, and Allie, We appreciate in advance the work and the content that you're going to help us with this summer. This is a fun thing to do with friends.
Allie's nonprofit does not take donations. However,
whoa, Dane.
Uh-oh. Is that changing?
We've got some updates. Yes.
Oh.
We are soon to be accepting donations because we take the advice of elite lawyers like y'all. I can't go out of pocket anymore. So
yes. So what I was about to say is you could give the money to us, but now we also want you to share your money with
yeah.
SC4CJR.
And by the way, since we have some high profile attorneys and high dollar attorneys, look, if you go on our website, you can be a sponsor of the show. You can donate, have a monthly recurring donation to this show, and it helps with our costs. And then you can go over SC4CJR, give them some money too, or give us a bus. I want a bus. That's all I want for my birthday this year. So
we want a bus too. Listen,
boom.
This is made possible from listeners like you. So
it's PBS. Please. All right.
We've got a lot of interesting content we're going to be bringing in May. We've been dedicating the last 2 months to death penalty awareness. There's some pretty out there bills in the legislature right now regarding the death penalty, trying to make the electric chair and firing squad the default method of execution in South Carolina when lethal injection is not available. And then May, we're going to be focusing on mental health awareness in the criminal justice system. June, in honor of George Floyd, we're going to be focusing on police practices and reform in our state. So keep an eye out. We're going to have those on Facebook Live. And also, thank you to Joseph, Amber, and Dane. We're going to be including some of those on the podcast here at Director Examination Podcast. So thank you guys so much.
The last thing, and thank you, Allie. You don't hear her voice, but the most important person with this show is our producer, Brindy. Brindy makes us sound good. She cuts this up, so it makes all of the random things that we do, it disappears, so you never hear it.
The woman behind the curtain.
She's the
Wizard of Oz of this podcast.
And I will tell you, so Brindy is a friend of ours. She's a producer, and she's very great. So you can follow her at Brindolin on Twitter. But I will also tell you, she has a TikTok, which she's not talking about. She also
has a podcast.
Thank you, Amber.
That's
Lit Podcast. If you want, it's like a monthly book club. Go check it out. If you are like Amber and like to read, or if you like me and you don't like to read, you like listening to things, check out That's Lit. It's a great, great show with her and our friend Carson Terry. But Brindy is on TikTok, and Brindy has a massive TikTok following. So if you're on TikTok, follow Brindy. She will.
One social media account I don't have to stalk my clients yet. I'm trying not to bridge that gap.
I just got it, and I'm kind of low-key obsessed with it. But
I told you last summer.
You did.
You would be a TikTok celebrity.
You would, Joseph.
Yeah, we're going to work on this. You know, I'm tired of working for a living. I'm about to make TikTok content. Anyway, so again, worst outro ever, but we wanted to say shout out to Brindy. Thank you to Brindy.
You got married during a pandemic. Sorry.
Thank you so much for listening. We love you. And we appreciate all the support, and we'll see you next season on Direct Examination Podcast.
Like, share, and subscribe.